This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Avast, landlubbers, and welcome to episode 107 of Rack Addicts After Hours. You've got Ben in your ears right now. Pete is here as well, as always, and we're going to have some words firing into your brain through the internet. Pete, how are you? What have you been doing this week?
Well, I'm not too bad, but I have something to report. The old adage that your modular system is never finished could not be more true.
What's happened now?
Because I've had some issues with the all-black system.
Most recently, fresh power supply. What now?
That was cured.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, when you increase the power supply, you need to increase the fuse that I utilise in the switch in the back of the case.
The little unit on the...
So typically, even on the big MOS system, which has four power supplies in it, it all comes off one power switch. And it has a 320 milliamp slow blow fuse in it.
Right.
That doesn't work for this, even though it's a substantially smaller system because of the new power supply. So the draw is too much. You switch it on one time and it works. You switch it off. You switch it on one time and it still works. And the third time, the fuse blows.
Ah, gotcha.
Because the fuse has been stressed on the two previous occasions you switched it on. So I've got a fuse blowing problem. And my order of new fuses hasn't arrived. It was supposed to arrive yesterday.
Damn.
And I had many emails saying that this delivery will be arriving with you between 11:15 and 2:15. And it just didn't arrive at all.
Yes.
I can still,
frustrating.
Yes. I can still utilize the system as long as I'm prepared to sacrifice a fuse.
Keep shelling out the fuses every
time. Yes, I'm burning through my supply of fuses very quickly. No, I'm going to desist from using it until the new fuses arrive. And then
keep it safe.
I just didn't want it to be a situation where I was doing a live performance and the fuse blew.
Yeah, of course.
Hence, ending the performance very abruptly.
Just a smidge. Just a smidge.
So that has been my battle. And
also,
I had a bit of a tiz-was with the ground control.
Do tell.
For some apparent reason, it decided not to save any of the patterns that I was programming into it.
How very rude.
I know. I went through the procedure very carefully several times.
I see the manual here,
Yes, and followed it. But alas, every time you switched the unit off and then switched it back on again, the ground control would let go of everything. Very strange.
Have you beaten it?
I have, but it did confound me for a little bit of time.
Did you? Was it something obvious or was it just being bizarre and obtuse?
Well, it wasn't obviously repaired. The solution or the resolution was a firmware update. I don't know how it related because it was holding its patterns prior to this episode. But I got the latest firmware, which I was due to install on it anyway, 2 point something.
A quite recent one, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I've applied that and lo and behold, suddenly it's holding onto its patterns.
Good news.
Well, that's great. But after last week pronouncing that it was 100% finished.
No, it isn't.
Well, it kind of is now.
Okay.
Famous
cool.
last words. I suspect there'll be some other issue. But no. So once I've got the fuse situation controlled by the new fuses, which have to be double the rating, I should be okay.
Good stuff.
But for a time, I was quite worried. You spend this much time and effort to build a new system, getting it all together.
Time, effort and money.
And to be caught out by such a niggly, relatively trivial problem. I did think that possibly I had some sort of wiring issue, which I wasn't quite sure what it could be because I had utilized these power supplies many times in different configurations for different systems. And are quite au fait or very familiar with their way they should be installed and couldn't work out whether something was shorting out or why it was. But once I actually started reading the Dofa instructions that came with the power supply, I realized that the little fuses that are actually mounted on the power supply would double the rating.
Right, right.
So there must be something inherent with a switch mode power supply that means there's a lot more draw instantly when you power it up, or when the power supply is given access to mains power and it takes its initial soak up, it must be a lot more dramatic than it is on a toroidal version, the earlier version of the power supply.
Musings that would be beyond me.
Anyway,
scary.
It should be all fine and dandy once I get the new fuses installed.
Good news. Brain gone. It's run away.
I know the feeling.
Yeah.
It just
happens,
like,
doesn't it?
You suddenly sort of go to where you think you left it and it's not there anymore.
No.
It's kind of just a echoey chasm.
Yes. Aha. I have been doing some thinking.
Okay.
Which is dangerous. One of my favourite Calvin and Hobbes comics starts with Calvin saying, "You know, I've been thinking, Hobbes." And Hobbes replies, "On a weekend?" Calvin, "Well, it wasn't on purpose. Anyway, I've been thinking, not on purpose, about modular." As one does. And since we're sort of in the process of moving and thinking about furniture and such, I was thinking about the table legs that I have on our kitchen table and desks. Are you familiar with hairpin legs?
Describe them for me.
So, funnily enough, they're on the corners of the table. but they're just steel loops. So, audience, I'm holding my hands up and making some strange waving gestures in Pete's direction. Here is the corner of the table, and your legs will be attaching there. They're this kind of loop of steel that would go down to the floor, and it looks kind of like a hairpin in that sort of elongated V shape.
Slightly opened up.
Yeah, and then these ones, because they're for more weight-bearing things, they have a third in the middle.
To brace them.
Exactly, and they look kind of stylish, and I just really like them. But I was thinking about those, and I was thinking about the moth, and I was thinking about the kind of cases that I've had, and I don't know if you've ever seen it, Pete. Do you remember when I had those Eastwick cases?
Yes, they were the ones that bolted together.
Exactly. I had, at one point, a stand so that I could, funnily enough, stand up and use the synth at the same time. Let me dig out that picture, which was made with a friend of mine. We kind of bodged it together out of some sort of box steel. Oh, do I not have any pictures anymore? No, I don't. Never mind. Either way, it essentially became... It was four rows of 104 HP, and it had that kind of tiered thing as they kind of curved back towards you, much like the moth and many big Ross LeMond cases. And I was imagining a small moth, 104 HP, five rows, but then standing on those hairpin legs at a height where I could kind of sit at it. So that's been going around in my head recently, and I'm trying to resist because money. But yeah,
I mean,
that's
you can
in my
make
brain.
It, and it would be substantially cheaper than
commissioning somebody to manufacture such a thing.
Yes, and I think you could make it reasonably inexpensively, depending on the materials chosen, obviously.
Mm.
So what were you thinking for the body of the case?
Just the not the cheapest option, but the most affordable option that gets the job done and doesn't need to look nice. So in the same way you've got kind of nice, thick plywood, few less plies than that potentially, as long as the structure is fine. That would be kind of the aim.
It does depend on how you're going to fasten the whole thing together. The reason I selected, and I believe this is 12 millimetre plywood.
And you've got nail gun and glue on your...
Yes, that was nail gun and glue, no particular fancy joints, no...
Supportive brackety things on the inside?
Nothing like that, and no dovetails or... Anything
else?
They're literally
working.
It's just literally ends being put together and glued and tacked with the nail gun.
Mm.
I have considered using a dovetail template machine, which I do have, but I risk using it on any of the higher materials. But you could do something in ply quite easily. You could do it in 9mm if you wanted to use it in a relatively thin ply section.
Yeah.
Have you still have the legs to hand? Is that why you're considering this, or you're just thinking of those type of legs in general?
Since we're in the process of moving and we're downsizing a little bit, there might be one desk going, in which case I could pinch the legs. If not, you can buy them separately quite easily anyway. I just like how they look.
I mean, I think legs are reasonably easy to get hold of. Even IKEA has a selection of legs
absolutely.
Things that you can purchase from them. I'm sure there's plenty of other places. Or you could even fabricate those yourself if you were feeling very experimental.
No.
Okay. Well, you're welcome to facilitate or utilize my workshop here at any stage for anything that you want to do. So the world's your oyster, really.
A scale model, I think, is in the future. That's achievable for me at home to get my head around how it might exist.
You can make it in foam core, can
exactly
you?
Yeah, the foam board that you can just cut with a just an X-Acto, super easy.
Oh, I didn't say that's the one thing I said, because you haven't seen inside the black case, and we were talking about the power
had
shield
much earlier in the process, though.
But you won't have seen the one that's in there.
No,
it's
not at all.
Black foam core.
Oh, it is. You were actually saying you were going to do something like that, weren't
black
you?
Foam core glued with a heat gun, and then it's attached inside the case over the power supply with two opposing pieces of Velcro with glue.
Yeah,
you know, the sort of thing.
The sticky back Velcro thingies.
That's it. Sticky back Velcro.
Gotcha.
And it worked really well.
Mm.
And it's very, I would say, obtuse or anonymous. It's not obvious because it's matte black inside, and then a black foam core cut cover, which stealthy. Is matte, so it's quite stealthy, as you say.
Your case is stealthy on the outside, the inside when you take the lid off, and then also on the inside when the modules are out.
It's a bit like that spaceship that they saw in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy at the restaurant at the end of the universe.
Yeah. No, I remember the one.
So smooth you can't feel it.
Yeah. Always great descriptions from Douglas Adams.
Yes. And he was quite a philosopher. I think there was a lot of messages in that, or those books and plays, that was a lot deeper than just the superficial comedy.
Yeah, most definitely. Now, this week, I have been neck-deep in paperwork still, which is boring and not fun to talk about. But I've also been reading a book that my mother lent me called...
Well, it's nice that you're quite a... I mean, I would imagine that was the culture that your parents developed. It's very encouraging and... What's the right word? I'm not trying to say educational, but stimulating for yourself and your sister.
Yeah, it certainly gave us a lot of free rein to just go where we wanted to go and supported us in that kind of thing.
And there seems to be a lot of cross-pollination with sharing literature. You know, your sister will refer a book to you, your mum has referred a book to you.
Definitely. It's happened more since we both went to university, because my sister was, and always has been, huge into her books and literature, and she's big on Shakespeare and all the classic stuff. But she did a sci-fi module when she did her English degree, and suddenly she's absolutely loving sci-fi stuff, and she's been chucking... She recommended The City and the Stars to me.
Oh, just on that note, I don't know how official, whether this is official, I haven't looked into it deeply, but I did see a rumour that De Villeneuve is going to do Rendezvous with Rama.
Oh, my... I've got to keep an eye out for that. That would be incredible. Yes, 20 episodes ago, maybe less, probably less.
A lot less.
I finished reading that. A recommendation from Luke and an excellent one. That would be...
But it could just be a rumour, but I did see it in... I can't remember if it was in print. It was certainly on the internet, but you can't believe, 90% of what you read on the internet...
I'll keep my fingers crossed. Yes, derailed from forgetting the name of a book, talking about my sister recommending loads of sci-fi. Yes. So yeah, we do share a lot of books and TV and recommendations and music and all that. Yeah, it's good. Anyway, I found the name of the book. It is A Life Less Throwaway by Tara Button. Yes, Tara Button, who is the CEO of a website called, a company and website called Buy Me Once, which kind of does what it says on the tin. It's a website. They purvey certain things that are designed to be bought once, and then you
I do
never
like
need
those type of
another
products.
Thing. Yes, it's what we're always talking about, like the fancy hammer, the lovely teapot. What else have we had? The Fisher Space Pen. I'm trying to think what else we've talked
the
about.
The extra special bread knife.
The extra special bread knife, which might be here in time for next episode. We can give it a test drive, maybe. All of those things. This is a website full of them. And the book is great. It's all about, you know, resisting fast fashion consumerism and buying with intentionality. Buying with intention and fixing things and all that kind of stuff. But it's good to have a look at the kind of products that they say, yeah, this is a lifetime thing. For example, there's an Australian company called Solid Technics, who make cast iron cookware, but rather than, well, if you imagine your standard cast iron pan, absolute lump of a thing for searing steaks or something, you know what I'm thinking of. These are sort of one piece molded things, but they're much, much lighter, and you'll have to season them, you know, in that kind of way, but they're for life, apparently. And they also sell the manual espresso maker that I have at home, the Rock espresso machine. What else? There are lots of things. But one that I've seen in multiple places is a pair of jeans. And I'm not tempted by these, just so you're aware. I need to go back to Coldrop's Yard in London to pick up a knife that I've left there for sharpening. And... a couple of doors down from the place, called Kitchen Provisions, if you're interested, is the Black Horse Lane Atelier, or Atelier, I don't know how to pronounce it, because I've only seen it written down in this last year. They make jeans, they are denim people, and their jeans are available on the Buy Me Once website. So the implication is, that's your jeans, you can repair them, that's all you need done for the rest of time. So, these are the ones that aren't... tailored, you know, made to measure kind of ones. So just off the shelf jeans. There's a range of prices. Place your bets.
Okay, I'm going to go large. £200.
That's kind of in the middle, actually.
I don't know which way, what to say about that. Which way to go?
So
go up.
The cheapest ones I can see here are £185. The most expensive, which are the made from 14-ounce Japanese indigo selvedge denim, because we all know what all of that means. Why is there a weight when it's not a hide of an animal? I don't understand. Anyway, £260.
I mean, it's a lot, but I know that you could get certain designer jeans that are going to be up there, if not more.
Mm. These are just jeans, because they're not flashy in any way. They're just meant to be a really good pair of jeans that lasts ages. Here's the thing. My jeans that I'm sitting in right now cost me £20, and the normal way that they die is just a hole kind of from the walking friction, so in the kind of crotch area, it tends to be the way they go, and they last me about 6 months.
That's not very long for a pair of jeans.
How long do your jeans last you?
Years.
Your jeans last you years?
Yeah,
wow,
years,
jealous.
And years.
Where'd you get your jeans, Pete?
Sainsbury's.
Wow, amazing.
But it depends how many pairs you've got.
I only have two pairs of jeans.
I've got about 10.
There we go. That'll be it. So,
and I do rotate them.
Yeah, and that would be an advantage. So,
but
anyway,
6 months does seem not very long.
I think it's not too bad if you consider a few things. They have an extra percentage of some stretchy fabric in there, so they're a bit more mobile, which was particularly great working at the shop, because as you're aware, it can be quite a physical job.
It's a very physical job for
a
shop.
Yeah, and when I was working and living in proximity, I'd be walking to and from. So lots of walking in the shop, so the jeans would get quite some miles. So I think 6 months was a pretty good.
Because jeans aren't really meant for excessive walking, really, are they? They're fine for working in.
Yeah, not. I mean, certainly from just a human comfort standpoint, they're not ideal walking trousers. They are working, as you suggest, working trousers, which is, yeah, just hard wearing, but not super focused, constant friction type situations. Anyway, super expensive jeans that I won't buy, but I thought it was kind of interesting. But it's a cool website. I would recommend it. uk.buymeonce.com.
Yeah, I'd be drawn much more to the tools and durables type products rather than clothes. I'm not particularly into fashion.
They've got a lot of stuff in the kitchenware and sort of homeware. They do have a small electronics section, but it's mostly clothes, furnishings, kitchen stuff. They don't have too much in the tool category, which I think is a bit of a missed opportunity for the website at the moment.
Bit of a shame. As far as clothes goes, I mean, in fact, I was thinking this only today when I was perusing the clothes at Sainsbury's.
As you do.
As you do when you go to do your shopping. And I was thinking, why isn't there a shop that just, or a retailer that just sells kind of classics, which are the same classics year in, year out? Because there are staples, aren't there?
Absolutely.
There's certain kind of jeans, certain kinds of jackets, certain kind of shirts that they never go out of fashion. They're never quite in fashion, but they never go out of fashion. I must admit, a hell of a lot of those type of products are sort of USA based, or not necessarily USA based in the respect of the manufacturer.
Maybe origin.
In origin, or in sort of historical terms. Yeah. I mean, jeans are a US invention, and they were just a working trouser.
Yeah, trouser,
or
yes indeed.
Pants, as they like to call them over
trouser
there.
In the singular is a hilarious word. I don't know why. Trouser.
But other stuff, I'm quite, there's certain brands that, you know, I really like, and they typically are quite expensive, but they're the sort of thing that you buy and buy once. I mean, I'm quite a fan of shot jackets and coats.
It's not one I know of. How do you spell it? Just how you would expect?
S-C-H-O-T-T. Oh, thank you, dog. What is going on? Let me check it out. There's a dog having a...
What is wrong with you?
Is that your fuses? Oh, no. Yes, indeed. Shot are American.
Yeah. So that was a courier delivery in the middle of a podcast.
Yeah, that's a first. I mean, the only reason it hasn't happened is because normally we're evening, aren't we?
I have the fuses.
The fuses are here.
All sorts of lovely fuses.
Delicious.
I've also...
I like how they crunch.
I'll unwrap it in a minute. We'll have an unwrapping because there's some other stuff in there.
Oh, nice. Exciting.
Yeah, so Shot. S-C-H-O-T-T.
Them's the ones. US of A. Indeed.
Yes, and one of the items that you might be more or most familiar with would be the flying jacket.
Yes, the classic
sort of fighter pilot.
You would call
them
kind of sheepskin situations.
No, that's the sort of, I sort of associate those with sort of Second World War bomber crews.
Oh, right, you're thinking of the sort of military green.
Yeah, well, they're also doing black and it's kind of silky.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the sort of US fighter pilot jacket type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Shot actually do supply the US military.
Oh, wow.
Because they all also do peacoats. Do you know what peacoats?
Yes, I
do. So they do proper peacoats with great big buttons with anchors on them.
Yeah, will they be the kind that have the double row of buttons?
Yes, double-breasted peacoats. Mm. Quite pricey, and they sort of do a kind of material one, but they do a leather peacoat as well.
That's a vibe.
Yeah, but no, it's good. I mean, you can buy it in the UK. There are retailers. There is a Shot retail outlet in New York. There may be more than one, but I know there's one in New York, and I'd love to go and blow a few $1,000s in there. That would be great, but that's a bit of a fantasy.
Mm.
But it's the sort of clothes that you would treasure for a lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, something that I've been working towards and have pretty much achieved is just the uniform. I wear exactly the same thing every single day because it's simple, I like it, and I can't be bothered to think about clothes. So I've got the shirt. It's a bamboo t-shirt, which actually unfortunately has holes in it because of the cats. Oh well. Then jeans, and then just some form of jacket, the same shoes all the time. Yeah, just slowly trying to find the things that last the longest.
They also do the sort of American, I don't think they still wear them, the highway patrol, motorcycle highway patrol leather jacket type thing, Shot do.
Yeah.
There's also another brand called Vans. I actually have one here.
Mm.
Would you like to see my Vanson?
Why not?
You'll like this. You're always talking about things that are made really well. I've had this jacket for nearly 30 years.
Good. That's what we like. Oh yeah, proper stuff.
Let me pass you my Vanson.
That is classic.
Jacket. Oh, blimey!
It's so heavy. Oh. No, that's a timeless... I'm not going to hold it up. That is a timeless looking jacket, and yeah, that's heavy.
That's a real that is a real a classic Marlon Brando style American police motorcycle highway patrol jacket. Oh my god, it's so heavy.
Is that from your motorbiking days?
I actually bought it with the intention to buy a Harley Davidson.
Oh yeah,
30 years ago.
So you thought you'd turn up to the showroom looking the part first? Was that the idea?
Well, I bought it with the intention. And then I had children, and motorcycle fantasy had to be parked for 25 years or so.
Mm.
And then I resurrected it when I bought my motorcycle, when I bought another motorcycle more recently. And unfortunately, because it's a sort of 1950s design, there's no body armor or anything like that. So I had to wear armor underneath, you know, modern
back protectors and all that kind of stuff.
Elbows and shoulders and all that sort of stuff. So I stopped using it, and I've got a much more modern
integrated kind
version.
Of thing.
But that thing was a fortune.
Yeah.
So when I bought it...
Still looks in really good nick, though.
Yeah, well, it's been in the wardrobe for nearly 30 years.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, it has been ridden with, but not extensively. It's never been in the rain and things like that.
Yeah.
But they now retail for around 700.
That's a chunk. Ouch.
But it is a jacket for life.
Mm, yeah.
But you can, unfortunately, if you can't go, unless you're riding a motorcycle, you look like you've escaped from the village people.
Absolutely. One thing that really annoys me when I've been looking for a jacket, at the moment I've got my down puffy thing, which is great in the cold. I had, back when I was wearing lots of black, because everyone has that phase at some point, I had a jacket from Superdry, which was a waxed cotton biker style thing, which had some nice lapels, and it was really good. But the way it had its pockets were kind of the slanted pockets, and it fit perfectly. And I've been trying to find that, but I'd go for a brown jacket these days, so a brown waxed cotton jacket, and they do not exist. Because if you search for brown wax cotton jackets, all you get is barber hunting looking things, and I think they look terrible and makes you look like you should be wearing more tweed than you do.
Yeah, so, I'm very familiar with it. I have a selection of the particular ones I've got are called the Gamesman, I think. I want to do, it's got the big pockets on the inside to put your,
you can fit a 15-inch MacBook Pro in those,
really,
as one of my lecturers told me. When I was at uni.
Designed to put your pheasants or whatever you shot into the pocket. They're game pockets, that's what they are. And the whole thing stinks of thorn-proof dressing.
Delish.
The
annoyance with those is the pockets are top entry, which anyway, we've rambled a lot, which is always fun.
Yeah.
There are the top pockets are kind of fun. But there is another thing that I need to inform you about of my week. Do you like browsing stationery shops?
To be honest, it's not something I've done, but I could see the innate pleasure in doing so.
It's something I really like. And if you want to go to the ultimate stationery shops, you've got to go to Japan because they are the capital of stationery for whatever reason. I don't know. But there is one, a specialist, quite a lot of... Not quite a Japanese stationery specialist, but they do appreciate the Japanese stuff. The Journal Shop in London, Box Park, Bethnal Green, is on my to-do list. But I have ordered something from there, which is from a Japanese company called Traveler's Notebook. So this will be a leather cover with, you can get refills for the pads, and you can go grid, lines, plane, whatever. And I hope to bring that along at some point. But Japanese stationery, it's just Japanese stationery. That's it. We have some synth news. More than one thing. Oh, wait. One thing in the synth news. No, there's definitely more than one. Where did the other one go? There it is. Right. The first of two is a small nugget. We do know and like Arturia, though they're not Pete's favourite these days, given what you've been burnt on, although not really burnt, because you returned it very, very quickly.
I wouldn't say burnt. I just decided that I was not liking how it sounded.
Yeah, won't go there. Too many bad memories. Anyway, they've done that thing that they do sometimes, which is when they introduce a unique limited colorway. I don't remember what the last one was. Was it the black Matrix Brute that they did?
It's the last one of the series of Matrix Brutes. It was a sort of noir version.
Yeah, so they've done noir again. I remember they did the weird sort of Sistine Chapel limited ones. Do you remember those?
What were the kind of colorful surface? Wasn't that the Micro Brute?
It was one of the Drum Brutes and Micro Brute, and they had kind of old Italian paintings on them for some reason, but you couldn't quite tell.
Yeah, I can sort of vaguely remember. Yeah. Do you think it was painted on with some sort of sticker?
Something
kind of
like
thing?
That. And we would just, I remember staring at the press release in the shop, just being a bit confused and wondering why. Anyway, they've gone noir again for the Mini Brute 2, 2S, and Drum Brute Impact. And the Drum Brute Impact, all they've really done is taken off some of the orange accent. Either way, they're there.
Are the keys black as well?
No, they haven't gone the whole hog.
The only reason I ask is because I had a customer who was part exchange a Juno DS.
Yeah, there's a limited black key one of those, isn't
there? 61 key limited edition, and he said something that should be obvious, but it hadn't really occurred to me. He said the only trouble with these, you can't see the keys on stage.
Oh yeah, good point.
So it really made it obvious it's not a great idea to have completely black keys.
Yeah, I think the only other ones are that. I think there was there's the Roland Keytar. There's one of those with all black keys, I think, isn't there?
It's fine if you don't have to look at the keyboard.
Yeah, you don't want to look at the Keytar if you've got one. The other one, what's that? The Studio Logic Sledge. There was an all black key version of that as well.
Yes.
Because we had the limited one on display, because it was black and it looked okay. And then I didn't realise that the normal one is bright yellow. And who'd ever... it wasn't a good look.
I assume that they've been end of life, because I haven't seen one in the shop in the longest of time.
It's all DSP, so they don't need to be big. But they were huge, weren't they? Not heavy, but they were just...
Physically big and physically deep. I was never excited in any way about them.
No, they were fine if you had to, but that's as good as they get. And there was a lot of lag, because it's all digital control. If you wanted to do quick filter... things, it lagged behind what you were doing. So
they're not very responsive.
No. Anyway, in slightly more interesting news, and something we may have been anticipating a little bit, is, do you remember the Tip Top Audio Buchla range?
Yes, I do.
Well, it looks like we've got stuff ready for pre-order now. Just two modules at the start. We've got, let me zoom in on this picketer, the Dual Oscillator 258T and the Quad Function Generator 281T.
Is that from Tip Top directly or through UK retailers or any other retailers for that matter?
Let's find out, shall we? From Tip Top Audio, so retailers later.
Okay, well that's not necessarily that practical for us in UK.
Not at the moment, but I am looking forward to these being fiddleable and tribal. I'm quite interested in them.
Do they have an ETA on those pre-orders?
At dealers worldwide in the next few weeks. Nice and vague, as we like it.
Okay.
Mid-February, maybe. But yeah, eventually there'll be a full range, and it'll be cool. So after that, we'll have a quad low-pass gate, dual voltage processor, the source of uncertainty, and the big old phaser and sequential voltage source thing.
I'm quite interested, and I can see myself building a little pseudo Buchla system.
A baby Buchla.
A baby Buchla. I think that'd be a nice thing to have because of the sort of obscure functioning, you know, the weird routing, the way, you know, ins are into the ins, or the ins into the outs and so forth, yeah.
Yeah, excited, and hopefully we'll see something of these and we'll be able to report back. Fingers crossed. That's all we've got, isn't it? That's the news.
That is the news.
The news newsed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not a lot of news, as we said last week. No trade shows.
No
NARM. No winter NARM.
No.
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Let's have a look in your post.
Let's have a look. Oh, yes.
Jingle those fuses.
Earlier, mid-podcast, we had a courier delivery. I wasn't expecting this until tomorrow. And it is the fuses for the black modular system, plus a few other little nuggets that I purchased. So there is my... let's get them out, see what we've got in the bag.
Spoils.
So I'm unwrapping it as we speak. There's my list. So that is a set of...
I was going to say they look a little bit like... they look a bit like sparklers from a distance.
Yeah, that is a special set of twiddly... I don't know how you describe them. They're not screwdrivers because they're made of plastic, but they're for doing little trimming pots and things like that.
Oh, doing it properly without getting some random thing and kind of breaking it a bit. Oh, that's cool.
Well, I wanted something that I could adjust the really twiddly little attenuators that you find on the Queen of Pentacles and also on the Black Noir, I would imagine, as well.
Except for adjusting bleed and things.
And things like that. But they're so small, you can barely get your fingers, but they've got a little slot in the top. You know, they're tight that you can just sit. So I thought that would be easier to control. So I can tune my drum shots.
Didn't know such a thing existed.
Perfectly. No, I was aware of it, but I was looking again. I was trying to go for the free delivery there was a certain threshold. Also, I have in here
fuses.
They haven't told me what values they are.
Each
packet. All they've done is put the quantity and the stock code number.
So I have to find the stock code.
Yes. So I believe I've got 500 milliamp. I ordered these before I'd done the research and read the thing, so I need at least 800 milliamp. So I should have 500 milliamp here, 800 milliamp, and also 1,000 milliamp or 1 amp.
Indeed.
1 amp, and it's either going to be 800 or 1 amp in this, and theoretically, it will fix my fuse blowing problem.
Lovely stuff. The first time we've been interrupted by a delivery. There we are.
Yes, it's always a first, that sort of thing.
Right. As always, regular listeners will know, it's time to move on to the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation, which is how we finish off our podcast. What have you got for us this week, Pete?
Right, I don't even have to say it's another YouTube channel, is it? It's another YouTube channel.
Oh, is it? Okay. Right.
How strange. You know, it's like that I don't watch anything else. I do watch other things apart from YouTube, but I watch a ridiculous amount of YouTube. This is what it's come to. I have to also note that my attention span is getting smaller and smaller, and I think it's a symptom of watching this type of media.
Well, that's what I've noticed. Having not watched YouTube for over 23 days, I have an attention span now, and I can read.
Maybe I should try and purge myself. I don't enjoy it. That's the trouble.
Yeah,
anyway,
I did. Still do.
Right. Are you familiar with the program that was on Discovery Channel, and it was on several other channels, called Wheeler Dealers?
I know of it. I can imagine what it's about, but I haven't seen it, no.
So the premise was that there were two gentlemen involved. One was a kind of car salesman type person, and the other one was a mechanic.
Yes.
And the car salesman would acquire a particular make and model of a car. His portion of the program was the acquisition of the initial car and subsequently any particular parts that were required for it. And he would handle that side. And then the other gentleman, who was a mechanic, would do all the remedial work that was required to get the specifications of the car up higher. Now, on that program, the original mechanic for quite a few series was a gentleman called Ed China. Unfortunately, and I haven't dug into the politics of this, and I'm not really overly interested, to be honest, he, for whatever reason, fell out or divorced or got divorced from the production company several years ago. In fact, the program initially was, for many series, filmed and produced in the UK. And then he subsequently moved the program to the USA, but initially kept the same two hosts, if you want to call them, or same two stars. Performers, and they're not really performers.
All of the above, all at once.
Yes, what would you describe them? The two.
Yeah, they're just hosts, aren't they?
Yeah, the two. Anyway, so they moved it, including the two hosts, to the USA. And then, for whatever reason, Mr. China was ejected from the series. I don't know. There was a bit of some sort of politics involved or something going on. As I say, I haven't dug at all into it. Anyways, obviously, he has a certain amount of fame and notoriety. And luckily, he has focused that into his own YouTube channel. And on that channel, he embarks on similar sort of projects in respect of renovating and doing up motor vehicles. But he also creates unusual vehicles. He made a motorized sofa, which you can
as you do
sit on and drive around. And he's also got another thing that looks like a big orange.
Interesting.
Literally a big orange that you can drive around and that type of thing. But he'll do more conventional mechanicking.
Yeah.
And so that's this week's recommendation. The YouTube channel is simply called Ed China, and it's on YouTube.
Lovely stuff. As always, we're very grateful for you spending your time listening to our podcast, or even just having us on in the background.
Don't you have one? No multimedia recommendation.
Did I not do mine?
No.
I did it in my head. What am I on about? Yes, of course, having not forgotten that he has to do this thing on the end of the... Yeah, I'm going to recommend one of my favourite prog albums, because I can, and it's great, and if you disagree with me, then... This is a band called Frost, with an asterisk on the end, because... And it's their first album, Million Town. How am I going to describe it? I don't know. The chief writer, I believe, is a chap called Jem Godfrey, who's written a few hits for X Factor things. So he's a big songwriter guy, and obviously... Prog is a bit of a passion because there's no money in it, as we know, but really great piano work and some good synthy stuff that its tonality is such that when actually it's a lead guitar line, you can't always tell when it swapped from being a lead synth to a lead guitar, which is quite cool. Some really good stuff. As always, the longest song on the album is the best one. At coming in at, what have we got on this one? Million Town, the title track. 26 minutes and 36 seconds.
That is a very long track.
It's brilliant. Great album, so Million Town by Frost. What I have also done, just because I felt like it, was making a little playlist on Spotify called The Longs, which is all my favourite prog epics. And there are 6 tracks in this playlist, and it is nearly 2 hours long, which is great. So we have Million Town, that's the first one. We've also got Supper's Ready, Genesis, of course, absolute classic. We also have The Underfall Yard from Big Big Train, which is Big Big Train's Supper's Ready, pretty much. Also Genesis's Domino Medley, that's a favourite of mine. Tesla by Unitopia, an Australian prog band who may or may not be resurfacing soon. That's about Nikola Tesla, brilliant, brilliant tune. And Reptile by Periphery, which stylistically is completely the other end of the spectrum with many metally screamy boys everywhere. But Million Town by Frost is my miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. And over 107 episodes, we still haven't thought of a better title or made a jingle, but there we are. Thank you for listening to our little podcast, and we appreciate you tuning in, spending your time with us, or having us on in the background while you have a bath, mow the lawn, do some cooking, or drive somewhere. Thank you, and we'll catch you in the next one. Farewell.